Welcome to TSOH Weekly. My name is Alex Morris of the TSOH Investment Research Service. With me, as always, Francisco Olivera of Arlevino Capital Management. The topic for today's episode is Disney. The company reported earnings last week. Pretty strong results overall. I'm going to have a post out on Monday over at the TSOH Investment Research Service talking about the company's earnings and my thoughts on what lies ahead. One of the big announcements the day before earnings was this new joint venture sports streaming service that Disney's going to launch later this year in partnership with Warner Brothers Discovery and Fox. Long story short, it's, I believe, 14 linear channels that the three companies operate that you can get in currently through, a big pay TV bundle. Those 14 channels, along with ESPN Plus, and the idea, depending what we've heard speculated in the press, but also if you just do a bottoms-up kind of analysis of what these channels cost on a, normal rate card, probably going to be in the ballpark of 40, 45, 40, 45, or $50 a month. We'll see, and that might be part of this discussion. But yeah, it's a pretty meaningful change in terms of how some of these channels are distributed, at least relative to how they have been historically. Francisco, what are your thoughts on this announcement and where this may fit in the marketplace?
Yeah, I think in a vacuum, this makes sense as a as an additional way to access ESPN's content, and obviously tied with Fox's content that have a lot of good rights, such as the NFL and Warner Brothers Discovery content that have pretty good NBA rights that tie well with ESPN's NBA rights, in addition to, MLB and some college sports, college basketball. So it's another way to, if we rewind like 8 years ago, if you wanted ESPN, you just had to get the big fat bundle from your cable company or a satellite company. And today we're getting more ways to access ESPN. You got YouTube TV, you got Hulu, you still got your cable companies. You have streaming services from the satellite companies, such as Sling. And now this is just another way to get ESPN. And then we're also going to have an ESPN direct to consumer product. There's, of course, ESPN Plus that doesn't have all the flagship content, but it's just another vehicle. I think the way they view this is as this is not going to be the end all be all, but it's just another way that, hey, if on the margin you like some of this content, but you don't really want all the other stuff, or you're a person that uses Peacock that has Sunday Night Football and Paramount Plus that has CBS NFL, and you kind of go in and out of those services, this is another thing to tie into that. But I don't think it's necessarily going to be something where you, hey, we're going to get, 20 plus million subscribers and growing. I just think this is another access point. So in a vacuum, more access to consumer, but it also, to the point I'm starting to get, it's like it's starting to get very messy, right? You get the bundle from your traditional players, you get the YouTube TV, you bundled it, you bundle this with the other, Paramount Plus and Peacock. What is ESPN Plus? How does that fit into that? How does ESPN direct to consumer fit into that? This is going to create confusion when you have ESPN Plus, ESPN direct to consumer, this new joint venture, YouTube TV, what you pay for cable if you have cable. So I think it's a good mechanism to expand the market for ESPN, but at the same time, I think the messaging has to, start to get cleaner. Something you and I have discussed a lot is, the future of ESPN Plus in that sense.
Yeah, I think one of, well, I think you said it 8 years ago, a minute ago, and I think maybe for people who don't know, one reason why 8 years ago is relevant is, or 8 years ago will be when Iger first said that ESPN D2C was an inevitability by the time they actually launched this standalone ESPN service. So that may be part of the reason why 8 years ago came in your mind. The other thing when I think about when I think of 8 years ago and how this has evolved is YouTube TV and Hulu Live. I know for sure YouTube TV, but Hulu Live didn't exist 8 years ago, I don't believe. And they've taken significant market share in the interim with YouTube TV at 8 or 8.5 million subs now, and Hulu Live at about 4.5 million. I think the interesting thing as I think about this service is to kind of look back on the history of YouTube TV. It launched in 2017. It was a $35 a month service. It didn't have access to a lot of the fringe entertainment channels that were already becoming less relevant, especially to younger viewers at that time. And today, I'd argue, are effectively completely irrelevant given one, the lack of any interesting or original programming. And even if it's to the extent that there is, there's just a better way to access it these days through direct-to-consumer streaming services. So they started with a bundle that looks somewhat similar to this in terms of structure and pricing. And what happened over time is that relatively limited slate and that $35 a month product became something that's quite a bit wider and now costs $73 a month, which still looks pretty good in the marketplace. I mean, it's clearly taking market share, and I think that reflects flexibility, it reflects pricing, it reflects, modern technology and user experience, etc. It's just a better product than what you're going to get from MVPD at this point. But as I think about this JV service and what role they're trying to fill, I've come around to the idea that maybe the answer for them is to not go down that same path. That need is already being met effectively. And I think there's a lot of reason to think that keeping Paramount and NBCUniversal out of this package is actually quite sensible, particularly given what those companies are doing with their sports rights. So a lot of leaking it outside of the bundle to their D2C services. And then the other real consideration in my mind is how they price these things. And if you go to cancel, as I do often with these services, just to see what they'll say, they give you endless promotional offers. There's surely a lot of password sharing with these services. So point being, as opposed to putting that cost into it and not giving the consumer any option, I think the better play for this JV is to keep the price point as low as possible. And then to the extent that people want, the sports rights that are featured on Paramount Plus or Peacock, let them go out and do it directly. Because for younger consumers, they're going to be savvy enough to figure that out.
And do you think, as you look at this in the overall Disney, but particularly the ESPN business, does this give Disney a better chance of having a growing and sustainable ESPN business over the long term? I think, in that 8 year range, 7 years ago range, I think Variety had a cover of like an ES NFL football helmet, with the ESPN logo and the crack in the helmet being out. Cables going down, ESPN's going away. And they've kept losing a lot of the cord cutting has been accelerating and they've lost a lot of subscribers. But ESPN, now that the financials have been broken out, has done a decent job of sustaining and growing its profitability, at least for the past couple of years. Do you think having this JV is helpful in continuing that path or slowing, it's more about slowing down potential losses down the line is going to come through the main bundles.
I think it will, but I also think there's a lot we're going to learn here in the coming years. And simplistically, the way I'd say it is right now, people tend to be bucketed into sports fans. And if you're a sports fan, you have to pay for the big bundle, which through a legacy distributor may be, depending what package you're in, maybe $100 a month or something, right? I mean, it's pretty darn expensive, especially relative to what we've come to see with the entertainment-focused streaming service. So you have them in one bucket, and then you have non-sports fans in the other who are never going to pay for that because the costs are so high, right? I think as you get into a world of this type of streaming service for $40 with, no commitments in terms of what you're subscribing to, you get further down the road and you look at something like an ESPN linear or, D2C version of the linear channel with ESPN Plus, and maybe that's $20 a month, let's say. I think opening up the price points and the flexibility could have some pretty material impact on the margin. And I think it's going to, help to address this question of we've gone from a pay TV bundle with, call it 95 million households, and now we're kind of getting south of 65 or 70 million. How many sports fans are there in the United States, and how much are they willing to pay for this content? It's kind of funny that this is all happening at the same time that we're having these crazy, TV viewership ratings for all the sports content, right? It's kind of a the juxtaposition between those two things is very interesting.
Yeah, we just had the Super Bowl with the most people viewed it. It's like 124 million people viewed, the entire Super Bowl on average. And at one point, at any given point, I guess cumulative 200 million unique people watch the Super Bowl, some part of it. And you know, it's sports is a draw, and the NFL is king there, but there's still a very, very big market for sports fans in the US. And question is how ESPN taps that in a world that's shifting to everything streaming.
We've seen the first step towards the inevitability of ESPN D2C. So we'll have plenty more to say on this topic, I'm sure, in the quarters and years ahead. Thanks for listening.